How is it that we find ourselves surrounded by such complexity, such elegance?
The genes of you and me,
the genes of you and me,
we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA.
Hi, you're listening to DNA Today, a multi-award-winning podcast and radio show where we discover new advances in the world of genetics. From genetic technology like CRISPR to rare diseases to new research, for over a decade, DNA Today has brought you the voices of leaders in genetics in over 200 episodes. For the past 3 years, DNA Today has won the People's Choice Best Science and Medicine Podcast Award. I'm Kira Dineen. I'm a certified genetic counselor and your host. As a prenatal genetic counselor, I am shocked we have yet to produce an episode about Klinefelter syndrome. So joining me on this episode is the one and only Ryan Berganti, who has the condition himself. We're going to hear about Ryan's personal experience and how this motivated him to start the remarkable nonprofit Living With XXY. And Ryan's also a fellow podcaster, so he's got a great setup if you guys are looking at the YouTube video. So thank you, Ryan. You even got the swag on. I love it.
Thank you for having me. This is actually my first podcast outside of me doing my own podcast series.
No way.
So this is going to be fun.
Oh, this is so cool. So you're going to have like the itch to be the interviewer and you're like, you have to remind yourself you're the guest, huh?
I've never been a guest, so we'll see how it goes, hopefully.
Lovely. I love this. Well, Ryan, I first came across you through your nonprofit. So I knew Living With XXY before I knew of you yourself. And I'm a prenatal genetic counselor, as I said a couple minutes ago, and I recommend patients to check out your organization and even print resources from your website to hand patients and kind of walk them through, which we'll get to that as well. But, you know, I want to get into your experience in starting this nonprofit and just the reach that it's had in the world. It's amazing. Like, I'm shocked, happily surprised, like how fast it has grown. But as we get into this, we should probably define a little bit for those that may not know. Most people listening have probably heard of Klinefelter syndrome, but for those that it's new for, how do you explain to people what Klinefelter syndrome is when it's coming up socially?
So typically, syndrome has a negative connotation to it. And so a lot of people in our community, we've kind of just said, like, use XXY when you're describing it. A lot of people are going to be like, oh, what's that? Like, I've never heard of it. And that's pretty much every person that you come across. Unless they have some science background or some, like, genetic counseling, they'll know what it is on, like, a very small basis. But what I usually typically tell people is, like, I was born with an extra chromosome. Like, usually the conversation will spark on something, like, around kids or some maybe testosterone or some just conversation. I'll always, now that I run a nonprofit, I'll always try to find a way to, like, put in what I do or how what I was born with in a way to organically have that conversation go there. And so I'll just tell people, like, I have an extra X chromosome. Like, typically a male is born with X. I am a male. I just have an extra X. But, like, typically a male is born with an XY. Typically a woman is born with XX chromosomes. And then I was born with an extra X. So I've got XXY. And then people will instantly ask, like, well, what is that? Like, how does it affect you? And I'll typically just, say, hey, you know, my body doesn't really make testosterone, or it made a low amount of testosterone where I needed a TRT supplement, when I started puberty around 13, and that's a lifelong thing. And then I shoot blanks, or I can't have kids, I'm sterile. That usually sparks more conversation because typically you don't see men talking about infertility if they do have it. And I try to make jokes around it, and there's fun things that you can do there depending upon the crowd of people that you're talking to. It's usually kind of a shock for a lot of people, like, wait, what? Like, how is that possible? Like, did you go get it done? I'm like, no, I was born this way. And then I say, like, there's possibly, you know, like, it's a spectrum. There's some learning challenges that come with it. And then I'll go into, like, a little bit, but it honestly depends upon, there's a lot of detail there right off the bat, a lot of really personal information. And I'm an open book, and I'm down to talk deeply about all this stuff, but not everyone is, like, when they hear that stuff, they don't know how to adapt to it. And so, yeah, that's pretty much what I say right off the bat.
Yeah, that, and I have to say, you're such an open person of sharing so much on social media of your personal experience and really demystifying it for people. You've had videos where you're like, hey, I'm going to talk you through as I take my testosterone. And it's really cool because you're just taking them through like, this is what I normally do. I'm just going to like narrate what I'm doing, why I've been doing this, why I have this ongoing. So I think it's just so awesome because we see people are often open on social media, but it's different when you're talking about a medical condition and you're like, hey, this is my life. Like, I want you guys to know I'm someone that has this condition and this is what I experience from it. And from what I know about just like being a follower of yours, your parents shared your diagnosis with you relatively young, age of 9. So how did you process that information when you first kind of heard of this from your parents? Because they knew almost 10 years before that when you were still developing in utero.
Yeah, so my mom was 42 and she had me. I'm 37 now. So back then it was considered high risk for a pregnancy over 40. So they did amnios and that's how they found out I had XXY or Klinefelter syndrome. Telling me at 9, I think that they talked with, it was my pediatrician that then went into like child development. And she recommended that was a good age. There was no information back then about Klinefelter syndrome. There was like one article in the medical libraries that my mom found from Denmark. And so it was kind of a thing that they just were like, he'll understand it. That's what they gauged and they told me about it. I just accepted it. I knew I was different. And that comes up a lot in our community is like, well, how did you know you were different? Like, what did it feel like? And I'm 37 now. So going back to 9 is a little bit of a challenge trying to remember. But I just remember accepting it and be like, okay, this is me. Like, this is who I am. And then my parents kind of raised me with not being a victim. They said, like, you know, everyone has challenges. I think when they found out in utero, they looked at each other after they got the diagnosis. And my parents said, we're not perfect, so why do we expect our son to be? And they just raised me with that mentality. And then around like 12 or 13, they taught me about, like, I started taking testosterone shots once a month in my left arm. And that was like, I think it was 1 cc. And back then, there was also like very little information on TRT. And then they told me like I could always adopt if I wanted to be a father. They never told me I could never be a father, knowing that I was sterile. So, and then they used real world examples of adoption. Like we had someone, my aunt is adopted. So they use real world examples of like, she's, you know, that's a great way to have a family. And it was an acceptance piece. Like I knew I had challenges. I think I was hanging out with like the boys were a little rough and I was kind of like more of a sensitive, I still am like sensitive and emotional person. And so, that just kind of grew with me as I learned more about it.
Yeah, that's wonderful that your parents were so supportive and just the way that they phrased things to you was like, there's nothing that you're excluded from. It's just maybe, for instance, becoming a parent, that the path to parenthood is a little bit different than maybe some of your friends. And that was just kind of sounds like an open conversation once you either started asking those questions or they're like, oh, we should probably mention this to Ryan of just so that you're aware. And you've shared a lot on social media of just your experiences with Klinefelter or XXY as we're kind of, you know, renaming it or using different term as you said at the beginning in terms of the community. What are some symptoms or challenges that people in the community experience, either that you've experienced or just in general?
So it's a spectrum, and I think that's the difficulty. That's one of the reasons why I opened up and started talking about this online is when I did meet people for the first time at 31 years old, which was later on in life, I saw like what I saw online wasn't what I was like, there's no way that I'm the only one that's this way, and I'll give more context later on that. But it's a spectrum. So what you see online is you see the worst case scenario possibility, and that's Google. You know, you Google I sneeze and it tells you you have cancer. So it's like, and when people see that, they're like, it's immediate fear, like, you know, especially in utero, as you know from prenatal diagnoses. So you've got like low testosterone. You've got the inability, like infertility. You have learning disabilities. So you've got a lot of kids are on IEPs. Reading, writing, spelling, our expressive language is a little bit more like delayed or harder to over. It's harder to find that voice to be expressive, but our comprehension is like incredible. A lot of boys are great listeners, but then when it comes time to turn the tides and turn around, some kids experience some impulsivity. Like younger kids are going to be possibly speech delay. They'll do like, also low muscle tone is another thing with, young boys with XXY. And then there's, so parents will be in like PT, OT and speech therapy, early on, but there's a lot of kids that don't experience, a lot of the symptoms. A lot of men don't find out, and then a lot of the men that do find out, they find out just through the fact that they were infertile, and they find out trying to have kids.
Yeah, and that was a big difference with your experience, because as you said, most people that are in their 30s now did not find this out until they were trying to have children biologically, and that wasn't happening, or they're going in for an infertility consult. But yeah, it's a little bit different that your parents knew before you were born. I know you kind of mentioned adoption is a great option for people becoming parents, you know, regardless of their biological ability to have children. But are there other options, any options for people to have biological children if they wanted to pursue that using artificial technology?
Yeah, so there's a surgery called microtessie, and that's where it's like microneedling, where they cut the testicles open. You're out for it, and they go in and they like try to extract sperm that's inside of the testicles that's not making it into like the actual like coming out process. I'm not a doctor, so it's a lot of this medical stuff is pretty difficult for me. But and then there's like mosaic Klinefelter, where some of the guys will have XY in their cell line as well as XXY, and some is like greater and less, and then the other is, you know, more XXY and less XY. I've done a couple podcasts, a couple biographies of a couple individuals that are mosaic that have had kids naturally. And then we have a few guys in our community that have had success with the microtessie surgery. But it's usually cash out of pocket. It's not covered by insurance. There's some psychological aspects of going into the doctor's office and doing a sperm analysis or a sperm test, which can be invasive for younger kids that are trying to get, you know, see if they can find sperm before or after puberty. So there's a, and then some guys just like, you know, but then there's also donor sperm, which is like a great option. And then there's the adoption. And then we've got a couple families that have done embryo adoption as well.
So there really are so many options when it comes to, okay, which way makes sense for me? And you brought up a good concept for people listening, that everyone with XXY doesn't necessarily have that in all of their cells, that they can have, as you said, mosaic, where they have one cell line that is kind of typical male of the XY, but then can also have the cell line that's XXY. So it's interesting, the higher percentage you have of XXY, I would think would lead to more symptoms and you know, not consequences, but some troubles with infertility and different aspects there.
So unfortunately, Klinefelter syndrome being the most common genetic condition, and that happens to men, roughly, I think it's changed, but roughly around 25% find out, 75% die never knowing. I think it's around 35% find out now, within the last, I don't know, 5-year period or so. But there's not enough money in research. You know, we're hiding in plain sight. So if you see me walking around on the street, you're not going to know that I have this most common genetic condition. And so there's not very much money in research. And then, so within the Klinefelter community, then you have mosaicism or mosaic, and there's like little to no information on that. So, they say that there's a possibility that they can have kids, but then I do know some guys that are mosaic that have been unable to have kids. So it's kind of, there's a lot of unknown there.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And it kind of depends on those cell lines, if it's like where in the body it affects the most, of if you have a lot of, you know, X, Y cell line more in like the testes and everything, that would make a little more sense for those that are able to conceive. But I mean, that's me kind of guessing in just like how genetics works and everything. But I would imagine with nowadays, me coming from the prenatal genetic counseling perspective, most people that are sitting in my office that are pregnant now, or in recent years, recent pregnancies, the last few years, we've been ordering a test called non-invasive prenatal screening, so NIPS, that I know you're familiar with, you've talked about on social. So with this, I imagine we're going to start identifying many more people that have XXY because it's coming up in, you know, quote unquote, routine screening, whereas, you know, 30, 40 years ago, we didn't even have that technology. People would have had to do what's called an amniocentesis, which is what your mom had when she was pregnant with you and led to your diagnosis. So do you see it shifting of there's a lot more, you know, kids that are, I would say, 6, 7 and under, or are you not as connected with people in that age range?
We're connected with pretty much everyone in the community that gets diagnosed that finds us.
I figured that'd be your answer, but
yeah, I've talked to thousands of people all over the world, probably 12,000 people at this point. I've met over 600, probably over 700 now in person. There's, you know, unfortunately the termination rate, you know, when you look back at, there was one study that was done in 2007, it talked about, and you can see it and you can see the graphs, and it said like 70% in the United States. And this is for sex chromosome aneuploidies. And I think Klinefelter is specific, and it's talking about 85% Canada and then other percentage of termination rate. And so the information, because nobody knows about Klinefelter syndrome, and then there's a huge stigma online when you look at photos and information about it, most of the men that are living their life aren't going to open up and share. And that's where I came in. And so the non-invasive, the NIP test is like becoming more and more prevalent, especially here in the States. It's being done more and more. But there's been no study of like, well, is the termination rate increased? And I feel like I'm on a race against time with my organization trying to get that information out there to be like, we can live a normal, happy, healthy life. We're not going to be criminals. You know, we're not going to be serial killers, like all the information that's out there, and trying to debunk all those myths and trying to get people to open up about it, because things won't change and if you stay silent and you hide in the shadows. So we think like the termination rate is also increasing with the NIPT because parents are finding out, they're seeing the Google, they're seeing the information online. And then, so we've had an opportunity to save hundreds of lives so far, that we've gotten confirmation from families that our organization was like the factor of why they decided to keep their child. And we're just trying to get families the information that they deserve during that time. And so it's definitely becoming more prevalent as far as NIPT testing, and it's coming, like more and more families are finding out, but then we don't know like, well, how many of those families are actually keeping their kids versus termination. And it's one of those things that we're just going to keep spreading. Anyone that's willing to come forward and share their story, we're going to share through all of our like podcasts or YouTube or our biography stories online. So there's, and then obviously social media. So, It's kind of a double-edged sword, but I think for families, it's better to know early on, because if you can get that positive perspective or the perspective switch of being like, well, I have a crystal ball a little bit of like where my son might struggle, where we might need to help him out. But then families can also like worry about that and look for problems. And then they're not looking at their son as an individual, but they're constantly looking at their son as like, oh, the diagnosis. So there's a lot there, and I'll just leave it at that for now.
Yeah, no, there is a lot of information, and we'll put a link in the show notes to that article from 2007, that it is a double-edged sword, as you said, of we're getting more of that information, but when people go to Google that information, what are they getting? And I remember you had a video recently where you were really, really excited that a certain image had been either taken down or that your images are coming up higher in Google searches, so that when people are like, what does someone with XXY Klinefelter look like? This has shifted, because I've kind of seen the same images over the years, but I think organizations like yours are really showing like, hey, here's like a bunch of people with the condition, and that it's a spectrum, as you said, just like most genetic disorders.
Yes. So there was an image when you Googled Klinefelter syndrome, the first thing that popped up on a phone or on a computer was, on a computer, it's on the right-hand side. On the phone, it was the first thing you saw. And it was an illustration of someone that had their hands on their hips, had gynecomastia, a square head, glasses, He was in his bedroom, weight around the tummy, which we have. Not all of us have it, but some of us do. And it was a very, like, it was just not the, it was not a representation of our entire community. And so that's gone forever. And that's a huge win for us because images are so powerful. There's still some images out there where you have a man that's, you know, standing naked up against a numbered wall, and he's standing with his arms and legs out and like his wingspan, because we have longer arms. And he has like a black strip over his eyes. And
yeah, very common for genetic conditions of taking pictures of children doing that or adults. And I cringe when I see images like that, because I'm like, why can't we just show images of like, oh, this is a kid like playing a sport or doing something where it's just a little more natural and not so science, medical, artificial feeling.
Yeah, we actually are working on a huge project with a huge company that does medical drawings. It's supposed to be out Whoa. In 2 weeks.
Oh, amazing.
It's going to impact over 40 websites.
We'll put a link to the show notes for that too. Amazing.
Yeah, so that's big. And then just getting, I think what it is getting the real life. That's what our organization does the best. We've created a safe space for individuals to share their stories. And people are now coming out of the woodworks to share because they know that things won't change unless they put themselves out there. And so now they have a safe space where if they don't feel like doing a video podcast like this, they can get on and do a normal, like just an audio podcast, or they can do a YouTube video. We can share a post on social media. Like there's definitely tons of avenues when they're ready to share. And then we do share a lot of anonymous stories as well, because they're not ready to come out, but eventually they will. And it shows that like someone that's anonymous can also share their experience.
Yeah. And you bring up such a good point of, you know, we talked about how people with XXY can have differences compared to other people that don't have an extra sex chromosome. But something that you also really highlight in these types of interviews that you're talking about is positive traits and success stories of individuals with XXY. What are some things that you think of, like for about you, like for listeners? I think of kind of how you've explained yourself as right brain, that you've enjoyed a career as being a chef. What are some other things that you think of either about yourself or other people in the community in terms of like positive traits? Because we see a lot of negativity online about conditions. And I think there's a time and place for learning that medical aspect to it. Like, okay, well, what medical care may this person need in the future? But I think we also need the other side of that to look at the full picture.
Yeah. So when I did a study at the NIH, I did a 5-day longitudinal study that I was a part of. And they were studying all this medical stuff. And I was like, hey, why can't you guys study like what we're good at or the positive of our life? Why is it always just comparing us to the XY male? Through my experience and then through just like kind of interviewing and asking our community, there's a lot of empathy in our community, a lot of kind, caring guys, the nice guy, if you put it that way in real world sense. But then a lot of us are very visual, hands-on learners, very photographic memory in that aspect. You get a lot of guys that go into the professions of, like I was a chef, so you get a lot of electricians and plumbers and like just hands-on jobs. But then we also have guys that have PhDs and electrical engineers. And I mean, our community literally has everything that the rest of the population has that doesn't have an extra chromosome. You get a lot of observers, a lot of guys that are good at paying attention, like really good at paying attention to detail. When we tell stories, we kind of have to say like, oh, she had pink shoelaces, and we kind of make the opposite, like the details of the story that matter to us, because we see when you have a photographic memory, you take pictures of things, which also unfortunately it has a, you know, it's hard to express yourself when you think and see and all this detail, and you're trying to then turn it around and communicate to other people out there. There's so many great things about individuals in our community, and that's something that wasn't highlighted before I started this organization. And how are you supposed to build people up, and how are you supposed to like feel like you're a part of society and that you can be successful and happy and live a good life if nothing, when you get diagnosed and you go online and you read about it, nothing tells you anything. It just says you have low IQ and you're not going to have kids and you're going to die like earlier and just all these things. Like, why would you want to open up and then tell people about it and be proud of having this diagnosis?
Yeah, I think that's so beautifully said, and that there's just so many myths to debunk with this. And I think you've done that really nicely of just providing like, yeah, it's a spectrum and some people have this, some people have that. And that so many people also, as you mentioned, that, you know, we estimate like only 25-ish percent of people with XXY are even diagnosed in their life. So sometimes it can also be so mild in terms of medical symptoms that we don't even know we have it, especially if, you know, that person didn't, you know, try to have biological children naturally, or, you know, is that being often a time when people are finding out about this diagnosis. And I know at the top I referenced that living with XXY has such amazing support and resources. We've talked a lot about the support of you guys talking directly to people in the community or that may become in your community. But you also have these great resources where people can just go on your website and download them. So as a prenatal genetic counselor, I have definitely done this. You're my first place I go to. I download, the prenatal testing roadmap to kind of see like in a pregnancy, how does that flow look like? And then also the establishment of care guide of, okay, if you have a child that has XXY, of okay, how is their care maybe going to be different than your other children that don't have this diagnosis? Any other, and we'll put links to that in the show notes as well, also available at dnatoday.com. Any other like resources that people are often saying, oh, this was the best, or other things that we didn't highlight about living with XXY?
I mean, the personal stories is why people come to us to see that their son is going to live a happy, healthy, quality of life. And then obviously the images. We are constantly trying to update the website. We're being pulled in so many different directions, right? You have prenatal diagnoses, that's its own thing. Then you have men that are being diagnosed with infertility during that period of time. So then that's its own thing. And then you have kind of everything in between. We have like a Facebook support group right now, just because it's the easiest platform to kind of have, that there. And I can give you the links to all like to that. We have a brochure and we just actually published it. We have a couple sign up forms where people can apply to receive that for either genetic counseling, medical or personal, teachers and all that. And it just gives a little rundown on what the syndrome is, what the positives are, and then where you can find out more information.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And I know we kind of mentioned at the beginning that you've met with so many people in your community and just traveled all over the place to meet with people, which is just, I can't imagine like such being such a unique experience and just that connection. Even like I was watching a video of you talking with some other guys. You guys were on like a dock on like a lake trip. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that's Lake Burton in Georgia.
Yes. Yeah. So, and it just seemed great that you guys are just like hanging out and that you have so much that you can talk about in common. But a lot of things that I talk about with patient advocates is like, you might mention something, but it's great because you don't have to over explain it to someone. Like they'll just get it. You don't have to get into details, but you just know that they understand that aspect of your condition or just daily life or whatever it is. And as far as I know, you have a presence in over like 40 countries. Is that right?
Yeah. I bet you it's even more by now.
Right.
But one of the reasons when I first went to a conference and I met people for my first time and I Googled it for my first time at 31, which a lot of people don't know, is that I was a chef at the time, and the best way to meet people and the best way to travel is to know locals, because you get the local experience with the food scene. And so I got on social media for my second time. I deleted it for like 10 years, and then I got back on it, and I decided to like reach out, and I went on Facebook, and I was positive, and I got all these people that were like, who are you? Like a lot of people questioned that, do I have this, or am I a doctor, am I a researcher? And then so I went on a quest to just meet as many people as I could, and I've traveled to Poland, Australia, New Zealand, and then here in the United States so far. I'd like to get out and do more, but this organization has taken off. So it's all about kind of meeting people where they're at in their comfort zone. And people have opened up their houses to me. And before COVID, it was incredible. Now it's gotten kind of back to normal and the traveling aspect. And it's incredible just to be able to go into people's homes and meet them at where they're at and talk to them. And also just get to know them and not the diagnosis. Like the diagnosis is what brought us together, but then you're building that community and then letting the guys guys know, like especially the guys in their like early 20s to like high school area, that there is a support system out there, that there are guys, that they're not alone with this diagnosis. And also eating good food.
Yes. Huge, huge plus there. I love that. That XXY is what brought you there, but then you just get to know each other. And like, that was your connection. And then taking it from there, that is amazing. Well, I thought I would just end with, if there's anything that you want healthcare providers to know. So people that are genetic counselors like me, or, you know, pediatricians, OBGYNs, like anyone that, you know, might be coming across this condition, and just so that they know a little more about, maybe not how to counsel on it, but any other myths that we haven't really talked about of like, I don't know where this came from, or like, this comes up all the time, I'm always telling people that's not accurate.
So there's a lot. I would say the number one word would be empathy, is that we're people too, and we can live a normal, healthy, happy life. And what you read and what you learn about in textbooks is such outdated and old information, especially when you see the photos. To not Google it before you have a patient that, you know, it's your first patient where you're being diagnosing this person with, or parents, especially termination. There's a lot of that going around in the medical community. And there's a lot of misinformation, just telling them that, oh, they'll be a grocery bagger, or, you know, they're going to have to live at home their whole life. And so it's just, make sure that you're like looking for new resources. Come to Living with XXY and just see the Instagram page of the thousands of kids and men. And you know, we don't look, or, you know, we're not any different than anyone else other than that chromosome. And so it's just bring a little bit more empathy towards that diagnosis, or towards the people that are experiencing it. And then, you know, try to help us squash the stigma. Try to help us, you know, look at this as like, you're one in 500. This is something that you're having a boy, like you're having, this is a special moment, an experience. This is something to look at as in a positive way, instead of being like, oh, we're sorry. And that's what a lot of the families, I'd say 75% of the families are coming to us with a prenatal or some type of diagnosis in the negative way, where they're like not sure what they're going to do. And so we're just hoping that people will find our organization and look at the resources we have, and then just talk more about it and spread more information, because word of mouth is the best way.
It really is. It still is. Despite all the technology we have and everything, word of mouth is still beats out everything else. But thank you so much, Ryan. You've put so much of your energy and efforts and your own empathy into building Living with XXY. It is just such a fantastic resource on the provider end, on the patient end. You guys are just doing such amazing work. And I can't wait to keep following you and just seeing you guys grow and grow and grow. And just all the lives that you're having this positive influence on. I think it's just awesome. I think it's always a good thing when medical providers can look at a patient advocacy organization, because that's where you're going to get the most up-to-date information. And it's just, that's always, you know, I'll read a little medical information, and then I try to find a patient organization whenever a condition comes up that, you know, I don't know super, super well. But thank you so much, Ryan. You were just such a delight. Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much.
For more information about today's episode, visit dnatoday.com, where you can also stream all 200 plus episodes of the show, including video versions of interviews recorded in 2021 or later. Any questions, episode ideas, guest pitches, or sponsor inquiries can be sent into info@dnatoday.com. Be sure to follow us on social media, especially so you don't miss a giveaway. We are at DNA Today Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, and more. Please rate and review the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. This truly helps us climb the charts and allow more genetic nerds like yourself to find the show. Here's a bonus. If you do and send us a screenshot, I'll give you a shout out on the show. DNA Today is created, hosted, and produced by myself, Kira Dineen. Our team includes communications lead, Corinne Merlino, video lead, Amanda Andrioli, outreach intern, Sonia Tanaker, social media intern, Kajal Patel, and graphic designer, Ashlyn Anokian. Thanks for listening, and join us next time to discover new advances in the world of genetics.
The genes of you and me, the genes of you and me, we're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA.